You can do it. The time is now. Let's get to it. Just believe. Just believe. Just believe.
In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents the authentically entertaining voice of truth and inspiration. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with the always unforgettable, ever insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real life journeys, as we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves and the world in which we live. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. Good for all and all for good. And now your host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
This is Filippo Voltaggio, and our guest tonight is somewhat of a very, very special guest to me personally and to a lot of people out there in the world who know him as an entertainer and as a producer and as a director. And I know after tonight he will be special to you too, and you will want to get his books, learn more about him, and just indulge in the stories and the realness, actually. And it's the main reason, actually, he's on our show today, the realness, at least for me. And something real, here's a real moment that I experienced actually very recently. I came across a very young performer after his performance, and we were all hanging around, and I said, can I share something with you? And I started to share with this person, and I thought he was going to start crying. He got really emotional, and at the end he hugged me and said, thank you very much. And no one's ever shared things like that with me. And I was just, after having been on so many stages and performed in front of so many people and different songs and this and that, I just was sharing things that I knew that I thought he could use, and he could ramp up a lot quicker than where he was based on what I learned. Well, interestingly enough, I met Ben our guest tonight, because I was invited out to a symposium on the East Coast for performances. And he, interestingly enough, was not in the capacity of, quote unquote, one of the instructors at this symposium. But he was there in a different capacity. Nonetheless, he was there, and he was there present in every way, and in this way. And as I was reflecting on this, as I was looking at how this performer reacted to what I was sharing with him, which to me came naturally, I had learned this from so many people before me that have done this for me. And so on one occasion in between workshops, Ben was sitting having, I don't know, a cigarette or something. And he called me over and he said, you know, I was watching you on stage and I thought about this and I thought about that. And the next thing I know, I'm pulling out a pad of paper and I said, do you mind if I write this down? And he said, no, not at all. And then we proceeded to talk, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes. All I know is that I was so grateful to him because he had given me such useful information, and I actually had saved those pages for many, many years and was referring to them when I was looking at what kind of mics to use for this or that or the lighting, all stuff that Ben had shared with me. And I thought, now that's real, that's great, that's the kind of person I want to be. And I didn't think about that until just recently when this person reacted to something I was sharing. I think had it not been for Ben and people like him, it would have taken me longer to get to knowing what I know. And I might not have known that it's not only important to share, I think it's what we're here for. And so this is what I feel I'm here for right at this very moment, together with you all, as we share our guest's story, Ben Bryant. I'll tell you more about him when we come back right after this.
True performance takes more than just working out. Every day we demand more from our body. But what does your body demand? Hunger is not your body's call for empty calories. It's your body asking for nutrients it's lacking. It's time to reward your body with Boku Superfood, made from the world's finest organic ingredients, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and essential trace nutrients, all developed naturally and organically from nature's most nutrient-dense foods. Boku Superfood is quite possibly the best thing you can feed your body. So listen to your body. Reward it with pure, raw, beautiful food. Boku Superfood.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
This is Filippo, and I am excited about this. Our guest is Ben Bryant. I shared with you earlier a personal story that I had with him, and ever since then, that was, 15, maybe 20 years ago, if not maybe more. And I remembered him, and I stayed in touch with him, and he with me, and here we are now. He has appeared in primetime television shows, movies, and commercials, acted on Broadway, sung at the Met, or the Metropolitan Opera, produced over 1,000 TV commercials and dozens of industrial films, worked as first AD on features, produced and directed over 50 TV shows. Now he shoots and directs and edits all sorts of video productions. He has nearly completed three volumes of his memoirs, covering over 57 years in show business. That's over half a century. So if there's somebody that knows something about the industry from all different sides of it, it's our guest, Ben Bryant. Welcome, Ben, to our show.
Well, that's quite an introduction, Filippo. I hope I can live up to it.
You already did.
Great.
You already did, my friend. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate your eloquence.
Well, it's interesting that when we actually spoke about that, you remembered the connection. You didn't remember exactly what you shared, which was even more poignant for me, because it was the connection that brought that information forth, and so I took what I needed from that and am grateful for it. So,
yeah, the connections are the most important thing. The rest is just details, you know.
Exactly. Although you are great with some details. I have started reading your first of three books and the detail that's in there and the humor and all that. Well, I'm getting way ahead of myself. So you ended up in this industry kind of not by choice, or how would you say
that? That's interesting. That is a really good question, because if I look back on it now, knowing what I know now, I know there are no accidents. But I did not know that in 1957 when I was digging holes in the ground doing my summer job, and I ran into a high school friend that was a professional singer, and he said, "Oh, you should come down to the Civic Light Opera. They're having open auditions for South Pacific." The Civic Light Opera in L.A. is like Broadway, and it was Mary Martin. It was 10 years after South Pacific was on Broadway, and it was starring Mary Martin and several members of the original Broadway cast, and Giorgio Tozzi was playing Emile DeBeck, and Myron McCormick, who was the original Luther Billis and one of the great comic actors on Broadway history, was redoing his role. So I thought, sure, why not? I mean, I'm a singer, and I'd sung in church and in school, and so I thought, sure, well, I'll take a day off, and I'll go to this audition. So I show up at this audition, and it was what we now know in the business as a cattle call, which was an open, non-union call, and there were probably 500 or 600 guys lined up in this outside this auditorium, and we went in one at a time, and the piano player did a little arpeggio, and you went, oh, and they said, thank you. I mean, that was it. And first time in my life I'd ever realized that there were a lot of guys who had voices that were just as good as mine, because I'd always been in a very small environment where, you know, I was the best singer around. And suddenly here were all these guys, I mean, not all of them, of course, but there were quite a few guys that had really, really good voices. And anyway, I didn't get a call back, and I left, and that was interesting. And now the second accident occurred about a week later, when I ran into a girl that I had known in high school who was a professional dancer. I was visiting my friend Bob Collins on the lot at ABC TV in Hollywood, where he was an editor. And I ran into Susie, who had been there doing a show. She was a dancer. And we chatted and said, well, let's get together and go to the beach this weekend, which we did. And we spent the whole day at the beach and went swimming and did all that stuff. And just about the time I was dropping her off at home, somehow the subject of this audition came up. And she said, oh, was Mr. Lester there? I said, who's Mr. Lester? She said, well, he's the executive producer. And I described who was there, and it was obviously now in retrospect the stage manager and his assistant, and that was it. And so she said, well, Mr. Lester should hear you because you're really a good singer, and I know him. I have a contract with him. I'm going to call him up. So I said, great, thanks. You know, and that was that, and we said goodbye. And I kind of forgot about it. And a couple of days later, the phone rings, and it's a guy from the L.A. Civic Light Opera, and he tells me to show up at a certain time in a certain place and be prepared to sing two songs. And I said, great. So I showed up, and this time Mr. Lester was there because she had described him, and I knew, you know, what he looked like. And there were maybe 7 or 8 guys. They were the very few guys who had been called back from this open non-equity audition. So it came to be my turn, and I got up to sing, and I started singing the song, Without a Song, Without a Song, The Day Will Never End, that old tune. And yeah. About halfway through it, I completely went blank. I forgot the words, utterly. And so I just kept singing, and I made something up, and it rhymed. And I got hired. I was one of the 2 non-equity people who got hired, and I became an equity member. I was suddenly in a show with Mary Martin. I was getting $10 a week more for singing There Is Nothing Like a Dame twice a week than I was for digging holes in the ground 40 hours a week. I was in heaven. I was in show business. And later, years later, when I got to know Mr. Lester, because I did 2 more shows with him in the next few years, and he told me why he had hired me, and he said, you went blank in the middle of that song, and it didn't faze you. You just kept going. And he said, I knew that you had the makings of a real pro when I saw that. So those accidents and my going blank got me into show business and changed my life in a very dramatic way.
You know, Ben, I love that story, and I just can't help but make the correlation between the accidents, quote unquote, mm-hmm. and the drawing blank and still making it good. That's life.
Yeah, that is exactly right. That is a metaphor for life, because you don't always remember the lines in life, but you got to keep going. That's a good one. I thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And as I haven't gotten through the whole first book yet, but as I go through the book, isn't that kind of one of the recurring themes? Not that it's a theme, but I was focusing on that, saying, hey, wait a minute. That was an accident, but so was that, and so was that, quote unquote. Yeah. And had it not been for that, right? And the next thing I'm watching.
Somebody asked me one time what my philosophy of life was, or how I live my life, by what rules. And I said, I'm sort of the Yogi Berra school. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. You know, I've never, and I don't advise this to young people, certainly, but I never really had a plan much beyond, you know, next weekend. I sort of like took it, you know, I guess I didn't know it, but I was in the be here now situation before that became a popular mantra and a popular book by Ram Dass. I took things as they came, and if a door opened and it looked interesting, I went through it.
I
survived. And it served me well, and I've had a very interesting and very eclectic life, which was sort of my excuse for writing a book, you know.
That's for sure. And we'll get into the book and your eclectic life when we come back. Just to put a button on this, I think maybe having a plan and then going with the quote-unquote accidents is probably the happy medium there. But we'll come back with our guest and the happy accident that brought us together when we come back here with Ben Bryant on Life Changes.
Are you like many people who want to make positive changes and improvements in your life and in the world around you? Do you ever feel like there's something holding you back from achieving your true potential? Join Stefan and Shaylee Schifeidel with the Tad James Company, the world's largest NLP, coaching, timeline therapy, and hypnotherapy training institute. Get ready for a life-changing experience that will give you the tools to transform your life through positive change and will help you create the future you want now. Their training programs are designed to provide you with the revolutionary knowledge, skills, and techniques necessary to effectively create long-lasting and life-changing effects. Discover more about neuro-linguistic programming and timeline therapy at www.nlpcoaching.com or call 888-440-4823. That's 888-440-4823. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
Well, talking about real, this is Filippo Voltaggio, and our guest is Ben Bryant. And Ben is a producer and an actor and a singer and has done all kinds of great things with a lot of great people that we all recognize and love. And Ben, it's interesting that there are so many people that have written books about truth or about life, and that we're supposed to, or they want us to get lessons from, or learn the 12 steps of this, or the 22 steps of that, or the three right. steps of this, and all of that. And
I've read most of them.
And you've read most of them now, and so I get to read or peruse a lot of these, especially because of the show. And I sit there, and sometimes you just get a feeling when you start to read them, and you say, "Oh yeah, no, this person doesn't know what they're talking about, but the message looks good." Yeah. I have to tell you, there was this really special moment, and I think it was in the very first line of the book where I had no expectation for what Ben Bryant had written, except that I knew you and that you had sent me the book and I was looking forward to it. And I read the line or two or three, whatever it was, and said, wow, here's a guy who's about to tell me truth. Mm. Here's a guy who knows himself. And here's a guy who's just about to tell it like it is. And there's going to be no pretension. Did you know that you have that? That comes across right from the beginning.
It's really good to hear. I got to tell you that I didn't know that it came across that way. It certainly was my intention. And as I said in the preface, that you know this, I was going to do the best I could to make this an honest autobiography. I have read a lot of biographies and autobiographies, and oftentimes one gets the idea that the person sees themselves as a paragon, and they never made a mistake, and they never pissed anybody off, and they never did a bad thing, they never farted, you know. And I'm not that guy, you know. I've made my share of mistakes, and that they're part of the story. And if you're going to tell the story, you got to tell the whole story. And that's what I try to
do. You actually tell a story where you farted on stage. I mean, thank you for
right.
that. It was a great story. It's great. And we won't talk about it here. They'd have to get the book. But I'm like, okay, Ben.
Well, if you want to know that story, you got to buy the book. Here you go. How's that?
Okay. Actually,
it was certainly in a moment on stage I'll never forget. I'll tell you that.
Nor will the rest of the cast, I'm sure.
Yeah.
In any event, speaking of the rest of the cast and so many of the people that you've worked with, you have worked with, in some way touched the lives of, and your life has been touched by so many people whose names we would recognize, and a couple of whom actually have just recently passed.
Yes.
And it's interesting how your book is, in a sense, a tell-all, but not in the, oh, I'm going to tell you about these people, but in the, as a matter of fact way, where you get to know these people in a really special way from your eyes. Did you know you also conveyed?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's interesting because when I first connected with the man who was helping with me with marketing the book, he immediately started talking about my first book in particular, when I was an actor, as a celebrity book. He said, do you realize how many big names are in this book? And the fact of the matter is, I didn't, because I wasn't thinking in those terms. I was simply telling the stories of the people I'd worked with and the things that happened and who was a nice guy and who was not, and, you know, by the way, which most of them were. And one of the points I make in my book, in the first book where I'm talking about a lot of famous actors that I worked with, is that I think, you know, people in what we refer to as civilians, people are not in show business, especially because of all the trash talk you get on television nowadays and on the internet, assume that practically everybody who's a big name person in show business is a jerk. And my experience was just the opposite. I said in the book at some point words to the effect that in my personal experience and in my opinion, the asshole quotient in show business is lower than it is in the population in general. And I think the reason for that is that most of the people who are in show business, at least in the performance and direction end of it, are basically artists. And artists in general, I think, tend to be more sensitive and more aware than, you know, your average person on the street. And as such, they're basically more considerate and nicer people. And I mean, the jerks among the famous stars that I work with, I can count on one hand. Most of them were really terrific people and very supportive and very, very talented.
You know, Ben, on the one hand, I certainly understand what your marketing advisor is trying to do, thinking that it'll bring more attention to the book, make more money for everybody, et cetera, et cetera. And again, the happy medium, I kind of wish that you would kind of like focus it on a tell-all and tell it like you tell it, because maybe more people need to know that maybe that jerk factor, maybe that's just a publicity thing. And, or maybe it just happens like it happens maybe in everybody's life. But if somebody farts and that's all the news talks about, then one thinks that person is a farter. I you know what I'm saying? So that'll sell more stuff. But telling
you,
it
you
like
may be
you
right.
Do.
No, I hadn't really thought of it that way. And you know, I think one of the reasons maybe that there is such a bad rap on so many performers and stuff is that the small-minded people of the world can aggrandize themselves by saying bad things about famous people. I think that there's a certain kind of personality that takes great joy in taking, I don't know, Frank Sinatra or you name it, somebody famous, and telling all the dirty little things that they can find about that person just to make themselves look good, you know? And I mean, everybody in the world, everybody that I've ever known has certainly done a few things that were not perfect and wonderful. So you can find fault with anybody if you try hard enough, you know? But and I think there's an awful lot of that around show business, you know, that sort of rumor-mongering kind of mentality, which I find appalling.
You know, you not only have the stories, you have some video. I was watching the Roy Rogers video that you shot in his home after church one day.
Oh, the Roy Rogers, right. Yeah, that's right. When I was a kid, we grew up in, I grew up in Tennessee, a small town of Tennessee. And when I was 13 years old, my mom and dad, I was an only child that moved to California. My dad had always wanted to go to California. And the second chapter of my book is called Another Planet, because that's what Hollywood, which is where we landed, was like compared to Bristol, Tennessee. But we were still good Baptists, and we spent every Sunday finding a different church to go to, and we landed up at the Fountain Avenue Baptist Church in Hollywood. And one of the members of the church was Roy Rogers, were Roy Rogers and Dale Evans, who were at that time at the peak of their careers, the King of the Cowboys and the Queen of the West. And they were just terrific people, just so wonderful. And when I got to the point where I was thinking about actually making show business a career, I was a little conflicted about that because my mother wanted me to be a minister, and a minister of music or whatever, and I was, you know, very much into being a fundamentalist Christian Baptist person, and I was a little worried about being in show business. And so I called Dale, and she said, come out and we'll talk. And I spent a whole afternoon with her talking about that. And she assured me that one could be a good Christian and still be an actor and so forth and so on. I mean, she was a very kind and generous person, and so was Roy. I was really blessed to have known them. They were really great people. And I dated their daughter for a while.
Right. It's in the book.
So it is.
You know, actually, when we come back, I'd like to talk more of this, but you already started. And so maybe one more quick story before we go to break and then come back for a couple more of these. But there are so many people that do like what you did with me and shared information like you just said Dale Evans did with you.
Yes.
Yes. And so there had to have been more of those moments between famous people and you and famous people and not so famous people. But
yes.
Can you share a couple that we would really relate to or enjoy hearing?
Well, sure. Break, you mean right now?
Yes, we have a couple of minutes for a break.
One other person that was probably the greatest influence on my life as a young actor was a woman that everybody listening would probably recognize her face, but may not know her name, and her name was Kathleen Freeman. Kathleen was a character actress. She died, about 10 years ago, I think. She was on Broadway doing a role. She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress on Broadway in the production of The Full Monty, the musical Broadway version of The Full Monty, and Kathleen was playing the comedic female lead in it. Anyway, I met her very early in my career, and she became a real mentor to me, both in terms of my acting work and in career guidance, and then in later years in a spiritual way, because she was a very spiritual woman, and as I got out of being a fundamentalist and got more into a truly spiritual path, Kathleen became very, very much of an influence on me in that. But she was truly like a second mother to me in many ways. And in my show business career before I left acting, she was truly the most important influence that I had. And if anybody's listening doesn't know what she looks like, just go to Google and type in Kathleen Freeman, and you'll see the picture. And you go, oh, her, of course, because she was in hundreds of movies. And lots of television, and she was a wonderful, wonderful woman.
Wow. Well, if hopefully her family will be around to hear her memorialized as you just did. And anybody else, real quick?
One other person I just flashed on that was I didn't know him very well or for very long, but he was extremely generous and kind to me was Frankie Lane. Are you old enough to remember Frankie Lane?
I do. I came this close to getting to interview him, and he passed, actually.
Frankie Lane was truly a mensch, as they say. I did Paint Your Wagon with him in summer stock one summer. And within the first day rehearsal, he knew almost everybody in the cast name, all the chorus members, and was friendly and personable and... He did something that was so cool. It was one of my great moments in my life when we were staging one of the big numbers with all the men and him that ended with a big, you know, high note on the end and stuff. He says to the choreographer, he says, I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but if you wouldn't mind, I would like to have Ben standing near me at the end of this song because everybody's going to think that's my voice singing that high note. And he said this in front of the whole company. Now that guy is a mensch. That is a gentleman and a scholar. You gotta love that guy. And after that show, he actually helped me try to get a manager, and none of the deals worked out. But he did go out of his way to help me, and he was just a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Well, before we go to break here, just real quickly, for those who don't know who Frankie Lane was, Ben, could you finish this for me? Rollin'.
Rawhide, is that the one? Yeah, that show Rawhide, which that's introduced the world to Clint Eastwood, as a matter of fact, was Frankie Lane did the theme song.
Did the song? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's probably was his most famous thing that he did. Although he had several huge hits, top 10 songs. One was Mule Train, which was a big old country. And the thing about Frankie Lane is he was a shouter. He really couldn't sustain a note, but he had a very powerful voice, and he had almost what the German opera singers called Singspiel style, where he sort of belted it out, and he was very musical, but he didn't sing out a long note and sustain it and stuff, but it was very powerful and very dramatic the way he sang, and he was a great looking guy, big, masculine, tough looking guy, and he was a wonderful guy. I really loved him a lot.
And he gave credit where credit was due, and we appreciate that in this world.
And it's
so
a rare thing.
With that, we have more stories, I'm sure, when we come back with our guest, Ben Bryant, right after this on Life Changes.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic. And The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of 4 and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen. And the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, "I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up." A second grader named Chandler said, "I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life." And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, "This is a great story. Bravo, Shadow." The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
We are back. This is Filippo, and our guest is Ben Bryant. 5 decades in the entertainment industry, actor, singer, Broadway, television, the Met, Las Vegas, the list goes on and on, producing, directing, commercials, industrials, TV shows, films. Ben, is there something you haven't done that you want to do?
Well, there probably is, but at the moment I wasn't prepared for that question, so we'll have to save that one for the next interview, I think. I'll have to think about that one.
Here's an easy one for you, and I'll tell you why I'm asking it. Were you a football player growing up?
I was indeed. I grew up in the South. I mean, it's practically religion down there, but I was not quite old enough to play football until we moved to California. So I played at Hollywood High School and at Whittier College in California.
Well, you know, because and I don't know how I remembered that or knew that, but you're a big guy. And you're also very masculine and manly and strong and all of that. And you were singing at the Met. You were on Broadway singing and dancing. There's nothing like a dame. And there are so many stereotypes, and sometimes stereotypes are, you know, can be partially true, but you're from football to Broadway. That should be the title of your book. There it is. Your fourth book.
That's a good idea. No, I loved playing football, and I actually got a scholarship to college because of it, and it was mainly because of a guy who was a student teacher my senior year in high school who we clicked, and he saw a lot of potential in my football stuff, and I was at that point in my life wanted to be a coach. That was what I wanted to be when I grew up. I had gotten hurt one year during track season where I was on the track team and I wasn't able to run. And so I started sort of coaching the younger kids, and I found that I had a talent for that. I really liked coaching. I could teach people to do things that I couldn't do myself, like pole vaulting. I mean, I taught a kid to pole vault, and I couldn't pole vault over 2 feet, you know. And so I really enjoyed doing that. And anyway, Jerry and I got to be good friends. His name was Jerry Potter. And at the time, there was a coach at Whittier College, the football coach, whose name was George Allen. And I don't know if you're a football fan, but if there are any football fans listening, they will immediately prick up their ears, because George Allen became one of the most famous and brilliant coaches in the National Football League. He went from Whittier College to the Rams as an assistant coach, and shortly thereafter became the head coach of the Washington Redskins, and actually invented the phrase, or coined the phrase, "the future is now," because Washington, when he went there, had not had a winning football team for many, many years, and they were very frustrated. And he said, "the future is now," and he went out and traded for all kinds of veteran players, guys that were considered to be over the hill by all the other coaches, so he got them cheap, and they knew how to play the game. And I think his second year there, they won the Super Bowl. And so George Allen was something of a legendary character. And then when he left Whittier College, the guy who replaced him was Don Coryell, who went on to become another famous NFL coach. So I didn't play in an actual season for Coryell. I went out for football. I had been out of school for a year getting in showbiz and all that kind of stuff, so I didn't have my football scholarship anymore. But when I went back to school after South Pacific, I had a year to go. I just loved playing football so much that I went out for the team anyway, even without a scholarship. And I practiced under Don Coryell for about 3 weeks before I realized that I couldn't do that and do all the theatrical and musical stuff that I was doing. So, but I did get to experience him. So I was privileged to be coached by two of the greatest football coaches who ever lived, and that was kind of cool.
Wow. Well, you know what actually made me think of this, because I was listening during our commercial breaks. I was listening, and that's our producer Mark Legere's voice that we hear. And of course, he's got a great voice. And those who don't know, he's a singer as well. And he started out playing football as the quarterback, and so he's on the line right now. He's going to come in during our producer's wrap, unless he wants to jump in here anytime. Anyway, I thought the two of you have a lot in common. You all need to talk sometime.
Yeah, we should talk.
Mark, was that you trying to come in, or no?
No.
So one thing we haven't done is give out the website, entertainmentbooksbyben.com.
Yes.
Entertainmentbooksbyben.com. Or Ben's still working as a video guy.
I'm sorry,
Ben Bryant, video.com. Ben Bryant, mm-hmm. Bryant.com. Bryant is B-R-Y-A-N-T, video.com. But if you want to get the books, one, two, but three is not ready yet. Entertainment Books by Ben.com. And, you know, remember, Ben, at the beginning of the show, something about how you got into this business by accident. Technically, talk about a theme here. Technically, didn't you get into writing this book by accident?
Well, yeah. I wouldn't exactly call it an accident, but one day in, I think it was early in December of the year 2011, I was sitting in my office one day, and I didn't have anything to do. I didn't have any jobs in the house, and I was just sort of sitting there twiddling my thumbs, and I started reminiscing and thinking about my mom, who had passed about eight or nine years before that, and she just flew into my mind. You know how that happens. And I started remembering some of the things that happened when I was a kid. And over the last, 15 or 20 years, I have done a lot of sort of essay writing just for my own amusement and to circulate among my friends, little things that I think about, and I'll sit down and I'll write a page or two on all kinds of subjects, anything from the beautiful women you see on the streets of New York to, you know, what it's like to ride a bicycle in the snow in Central Park. Stuff like that, you know, and so I thought, well, I'm just going to jot some of this down. So I started writing about this experience I had when I was 4 or 5 years old that was still vivid in my memory of standing up in front of a Christmas party where the company where my dad worked, reciting The Night Before Christmas, and forgetting it, of course, and spontaneously learning how to lip read because my mother was reciting it with me and then in the first row of the house. And I just started writing about that. And the next thing I knew, Elizabeth was calling up and saying, "Are you coming home for dinner?" It was like 6:30 or something. And I thought, oh my God, I've been writing all afternoon. But I was into it. And it just sort of took on a life of its own. And for the next 2 or 3 weeks, I wasn't very busy, and I just every day I'd go there and I'd just pick up where I left off and start writing. And somewhere around the middle of January, or maybe even before that, I said to myself, I think I'm writing an autobiography. And it just, as I said before, it sort of took on a life of its own, and I didn't even have any thoughts about publishing it. It was just something that I sort of needed to get out. You know what I mean? It was just sort of flowing, and so I just let it flow. And by the time I got, you know, halfway through it, I was getting to the point where I was telling stories about people that I knew that were still with us. And so I would send, you know, a couple of pages to somebody and say, you know, email them and say, did I remember this right? And I would get these things back with, oh, my God, this is really good. You're a really good storyteller. And, yeah, that's the way it was. Or, no, you're wrong. And I did this and you said that. Whatever. But the point is, I was getting some positive feedback, and I'm thinking, well, maybe this is something that other people might want to read. And that sort of spurred me on and actually made me think a little bit more about how I was writing it rather than just being spontaneous. I started to try to mold things. If I was telling a funny story, I tried to use what I've learned about comedy in all my years in the business and get the punchline at the right place in the sentence, you know, things like that. And it took me, I guess, about a year to finish the first one, and I did a self-publish. I just did a PDF and uploaded it to a website called PayHip, which is a website that it's there. It's there in all the various digital formats. That's one of the links that you'd find on my website if you're interested in buying any of the books. And it's a really neat website because it was created by an author who had struggled for years to get published and finally had become published an author and had made plenty of money and decided to set up this website for people like me who are authors that nobody's ever heard of, who have written books and want to publish them themselves and publicize them themselves. And it was a place where you could market your book. You upload the files to the website, you create a page for yourself, you have a link there, and people can go there and use PayPal or a credit card and download the book. So once I did that, you know, I was sort of, oh, wow, I'm a published author. I got to write another book. No, not really. I mean, I originally realized that I wanted to test the water. That's why I decided to do a second volume. I thought, well, I'll finish this up. It's sort of a natural place to finish the first book, which is called Three Stages, by the way. Because the three stages of my life, Bristol, Tennessee, Hollywood, California, and New York, it was sort of a natural evolution of a title. But I ended that book in 1972 when I, you know, retired from acting and turned in my actor's equity card. And then the second book, all the years that I had been working as a producer and AD and film and stuff, and I would be with a bunch of friends and we'd be telling stories, and they would say, "Man, you got some great stories. You should write a book." And I'd say, "Yeah, right. I'm going to write a book, sure." You know, but then I jokingly said, "If I ever do, the name of the book is going to be Circumstances Beyond My Control," because when you're working as a producer, and I don't mean the executive producer who's in charge of everything, I mean a producer for hire, which is what I was. People would get a job to do, a film to do, or a commercial to do. They would then hire me, and my job would be to make it all happen. So that's what's known in the business as a line producer, and that's what I was doing. And what you learn very quickly is that once things get started, once the shooting starts, it's kind of like a war, and the best laid plans usually don't work out because things happen, and it's crisis management, and it's really circumstances beyond my control. So you just try to, you know, stay on the horse as best you can and keep the train on the tracks and mix all your metaphors like I'm doing right now. But anyway, that book kind of wrote itself because all I had to do is just sort of close my eyes and remember what happened on these jobs. And so it was great fun to write. And in that book, I really did contact a lot of my old friends that I've been out of touch with for years. And one of the things I did in that book in particular was to insert where I would tell a story and I would say, "Well, now Ken Licata, who's the director on this job, remembers this a little differently." Then I would quote his email where he said, "Oh, you're crazy. It didn't happen that way. It happened this way." So there's a lot of that in the book, and people that have read the books tell me that they really enjoy that and see that there's, you know, that sort of byplay between me and my former colleagues and stuff, and it's kind of fun. So, I've lost my train of thought here.
Well, actually, we were coming to the end of the second book, and the third book, of course, is not finished, but I know what it's about, and you mentioned her name earlier, and so the people that don't know, Elizabeth is your wife. So we have
Elizabeth
about
Hepburn
30
is my
seconds
wife,
to yes. a minute. Yeah, we have about 30 seconds to a minute left. If you can, well, let's give a shout out to her and tell us about what she's doing, because we like what she's doing, and her website, I'll give it as soon as you're done with that.
Okay, well, we met in Summerstock in 1967. I met her in July. We got married in November. There was never any doubt in my mind from the moment I met her. It took a little while to convince her of that. And we got married. We lived together in bliss for many years, and we had our ups and downs. And then in 1996, we got separated, and a couple of years later, we got divorced. And now we're back together again. And what she's doing with her life, she was a singer, a fabulous singer, and a wonderful comedian. She sang all over New York and with the San Francisco Opera. She did leading roles and so forth. And somewhere in the early 80s, I guess it was, she had a kind of a spiritual awakening, and as a result of some dramatic illnesses that she had had and recovered from, she decided that her role in life was to be what she calls herself is a healing facilitator, or a wellness facilitator, I think is what the term she's using nowadays. And she works with seriously ill people and counsels them, and she also writes a blog and gives a lot of the spiritual wisdom that she has learned from several masters and that she's learned through the years. And as we often say, she dragged me kicking and screaming into enlightenment, and she's the best thing that ever happened to me. And the third book is about some of the travels we did together and about our breakup and our reconnection. And I don't want to give away all the gag in case the folks want to read it sometime, and they'll have a little bit of fun with that. But anyway, she's a wonderful woman, and I thank the universe every day for hooking us up, and I thank her as well. And she's sitting here smiling at me because she's listening on the other phone. But
well,
so far she hasn't thrown anything at me, so I guess I haven't stuck my foot in my mouth yet.
A big hello to Elizabeth from me, and Elizabeth Hepburn, HEPBURN.com, if you're interested in finding out more about her. And of course, she's going to be a big part of the subject of the third book. EntertainmentBooksByBen.com, you'll find three stages there. Circumstances Beyond My Control. You know, your publicity says 5 decades in entertainment. It's more like 6.
almost.
Well, the first two books cover five decades, and by the time I'm done, it'll be, you know, six plus, I guess. But I try not to act my age. I don't believe it. I think 80 is the new 50 now. You know what I mean?
There you go. I agree. I couldn't agree more. And that's a whole topic of discussion right there on its own.
Indeed.
But we've run out of time together. Hang on so you could hear Mark and I do a producer's wrap when we come back after commercial. But I do want to give you the last word if you want to say one last quick thing.
Well, the only thing that occurs to me to say is something that I picked up in somebody asked me once, you know, what would I like the readers to understand about me? And I got a quote for that, and it's from the end of Cormac McCarthy's No Country for Old Men, which is a brutal book, but it's got some real beauty in it. And there's a character in there called Sheriff Bell, and I read this, and it jumped right out at me because it's kind of like what I feel about my life. And this is the quote: "It's a life's work to see yourself for what you really are, and even then you might be wrong. There was always some part of me that wanted to be in charge, pretty much insisted on it, wanted people to listen to what I had to say. But there was a part of me, too, that just wanted to pull everybody back into the boat. If I've tried to cultivate anything, it's been that."
Hmm. Hmm. Wow. Well, the book is your book is profound so far in my reading. What you shared with us today is profound, and this is profound as well. Profundity at its best. Thank you so much, Ben, for being with
us. Thank you, Philippe. I've been loving talking with you.
It's been a real pleasure, and a pleasure connecting with you and staying connected all these years, and for many more years to come. We'll be right back with our producer's wrap with Mark Majeure on Life Changes right after this.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page.
We're back after this interview with Ben Bryant, our guest. Mark, I tried to bring you in there in the middle. We weren't able to do it, but I think the two of you need to talk.
Yeah, I'm sure we have a lot to chat about. and with that kind of depth, you know, I think line production is so, what's the word I want us to use? Not underestimated, underappreciated, and in some ways undervalued, because people don't realize just how much goes on. And then to have kind of extensive career that Ben has had, anybody that's tried to assemble a group of people to do anything, to have a party, you know, and dealing with egos and a vision for, you know, what you want the party room to look like, much less taking the passionate, you know, vision of multiple people and the passionate creative input of either the actors, performers, anyone, and then assembling that and then dealing with life that goes on around it. It's just, it's really, really incredible. It takes a special person, and clearly Ben's that.
Well, think how long it takes to order a pizza with a couple people in the room.
Exactly. Exactly. Or order a pizza for, you know, for everybody on set while they're shooting.
Exactly.
And that is every, you know, production, whether it be a commercial or a film, every one of those is a business. Now, you start and you create a vision. You say, we're going to make this product. And then you go out and you have to build a team and you have to assemble a team. You have to align the team. And then you got to get all the parts for the team. And then you got to, you know, it just goes on and on. It's really, really quite monumental. What an extensive career. And certainly he's got a special outlook on what he does and how he works with those around him. It was a really great conversation.
And you know, it's reminding me of conversations that I've had with people that have either been in the industry or are just older, much older than I am. And sometimes when I used to be younger and say things like, "Wow, how do you know that?" things that were obvious to them but not to me, some people would say, "I'm old." Now, I'm glad Ben doesn't use that term, because he's not, but I do get that some people do learn some things along the way. Not everybody, but some people. So all those people should be sharing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No substitute for experience.
Pass it on. And then when you get somebody like Ben, who's actually experienced so many aspects, if he's going to direct you, he knows what he's talking about, because I've been there, kid.
But that's what I was saying. No, there's no substitute for experience. You know, that type of breath, and you know, he's seen everything twice, and you know, that affords you the ability of knowing what to do right, and or having various perspectives on why not to do something. So it's really a valuable asset.
You know, and I kind of really liked this idea. I didn't know exactly what I was saying or how I was saying. I knew what I was saying. I just didn't know how it was evolving. About the tell-all book, that is a book that there's so much beauty in how he talks about some of the experiences with some of these celebrities. And until somebody passes, people like to rag on celebrities. I mean, so to have somebody write about the fun times that they had and how they're real people doing real things just like anybody else, it's fun to read, and it feels good
to humanize the stories and yet to have to filter through and figure out which stories to tell in that span of a career. What a beautiful project.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking back on how when I met him, he didn't know me. He saw me do what I did on stage, and he obviously liked it or thought I had a talent and wanted to share and impart information for me. Now, it's just interesting now, so many years later, here I am, and we're putting him on our show to share about his books and his life. And it makes me think we just don't know anybody we encounter in a day, you know, in our life, what they might be for us or to us or with us years later.
So true. Well, maybe we'll be in his next book.
Number four, from what I say, from football to Broadway. No, but you had to have liked that, right?
Of course. There's certainly synergies there and a lot of parallels. You know, I appreciate the road he's traveled, no question.
Yeah, and I think if more people, especially in that part of the country, in maybe in Los Angeles, we're kind of used to it. New York, we're used to it. And you know, big city, big theaters, and Hollywood, and that kind of stuff. But in small parts of the country where sometimes the arts aren't looked up to or don't, they don't think it's cool. This is the kind of thing that I would love for them to, you know, hey, look, this guy, look where he came from. Look what he was. Look what he still is.
Yeah, very true. Well, a lot of those towns that you're speaking of have been built around sports, built around their sports teams and that. So, and as you're saying, maybe it didn't cross over into the arts as powerfully or at all.
And I think vice versa. Some of us grew up without sports and the appreciation for sports. So there's so much that we could be sharing. My mind is already going a mile a minute, and thanks to this great conversation that we've had. So thank you, Ben. This has been very special, and look forward to more conversations and more conversations like this here on Life Changes. I am Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you, as life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes.